From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield, this is Inside Eagle Nation, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.
Strike three called, it is well with my soul at J.I. Clement Stadium.
Your all-access look into Eagle Athletics is Inside Eagle Nation.
Toogie with one, a three, and a win it! Got it! Game over!
Let's go to the Learfield studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, your official podcast for Georgia Southern Athletics. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed. 75th edition of Inside Eagle Nation.
The silver.
Boy, oh boy, I never thought we'd make it to one, let alone 75.
It took us long enough to get to one, and now that we're at 75... It does make you think about everything that we've been able to do. I still think about John Murphy on the very first episode talking about Boston Butts. I know I've probably brought that up quite a bit. But the more episodes we do, the more we've been able to share, the better I feel that we've been able to do this.
Got a special, I guess, debut, you would say, even though the feature debuted yesterday, of our first True Blue Eagle of the Week. We'll get to that a little bit later on in this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But first, as always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. A jam-packed episode this week of Inside Eagle Nation. I feel like we say that a lot, especially when you get into the spring months, you get into the fall months a little bit, you've got a lot of sports going on, you take a little bit of a break around Christmas, New Year's, and then you ramp back up. But Georgia Southern Men's Golf going to be starting their spring by hosting the Georgia Southern Individual Collegiate over at the Georgia Southern Golf Course. That'll take place Sunday and Monday starting next week. Men's tennis split last weekend in Clemson, South Carolina. Got the victory 7-0 over the Citadel in the morning, then fell 4-3 to the Clemson Tigers Sunday afternoon. They will have four matches this week. If you're listening to this on time on Tuesday, tomorrow on Wednesday, they will be home at the Wallace Tennis Center against Mercer with 2:30 being the first serve. Saturday, they will head down to Jacksonville to take on North Florida at 2 p.m., and they will return home on Sunday, again to the Wallace Tennis Center just outside Hanner. 11 a.m. the serve against Gardner-Webb, 3:30 the first serve against South Carolina State, so a busy weekend for Georgia Southern men's tennis. Women's tennis was off last week, have three matches this weekend, all coming in Florida. On Friday, it'll be a 4 p.m. first serve in Orlando as they take on Texas A&M. Saturday, they will be at Stetson at 10 a.m. in DeLand, Florida. And then on Sunday, they will head up to Daytona Beach at 10 a.m. to take on Bethune-Cookman at 10 a.m. again. Georgia Southern Rifle has been off for the last 2 weeks, but now they head up to Moorhead, Kentucky to take on Moorhead State both Friday and Saturday. Two different matches against Moorhead State. Swimming and Diving heads to Atlanta on Saturday to battle Georgia Tech and SCAD up in downtown Atlanta. Track and Field, last week we talked about the Gamecock opener up in Columbia, South Carolina. They head back to Columbia next weekend on Friday and Saturday for the Carolina Challenge. Georgia Southern football having a couple of news and notes coming out. Had the home and home announced with Fresno State earlier on this week. It'll be 2025 will be the game in Fresno, California. 2028 will have the game in Statesboro against Fresno State. That puts the Georgia Southern football calendar, if you look at it, everything is full up and through the 2023 season. You have 2024, you have one more FCS home game to fill for Georgia Southern football. 25 and 26, you have an away FBS and a home FCS to fill. But starting to put together of who we're going to see in the near future again next year for the non-conference. Open up the season at Boise State in Idaho. You've got home against Campbell that second week. Got Florida Atlantic coming into Paulson Stadium on the 19th of September and then head out to Oxford and Ole Miss on November the 21st. A busy, busy schedule.
And here we are thinking we would never go back to Idaho. We thought 2015 was going to be it.
And we thought we were one and done.
Just we thought they're out, they keep pulling us back in. Boise will be a lot different than Moscow was. I've heard a lot of really good things about Boise. Granted, a lot of those are watching food shows, so hopefully we'll get a chance to sample some of those. Got a little bit of time to put together our menu before the season opener, but to see a game on the blue turf is going to be an experience in and of itself.
It'll be interesting to see, because last time we went out to Idaho to go to Moscow, as you mentioned, I think that was your first road trip, wasn't it?
My very first road game, that's right.
But we went out a day early, so we went out on Thursday, so we had a full day to take on Idaho, and now we have a full day in Boise. Whole bubba.
I would imagine we would go out the extra day early because Coach Lunsford was there in 15 when that decision was made by Coach Willie Fritz. So I would imagine you would do it that way, especially to start a season and especially how good Boise is at Albertson Stadium. But we'll get there when we get there.
We got a lot before that. Also had a number of Georgia Southern Eagles in different postseason bowl games. You had Donald Rutledge playing in the NFLPA Bowl a couple of weeks ago. This past weekend, you had the Senior Bowl down at Ladd People Stadium. Kendall Vildor had an interception. He also had Tyler Bass into the game with a kick. It wasn't a game-winning kick. It was a game-ending kick. So it's kind of what he's used to, but he got it done.
50-yarder right down the middle.
You would expect nothing less.
No, of course not.
You also had Monquavion Brinson competing in the Hula Bowl out in Hawaii. That's one that I want to go to. How do you get the job of covering the Hula Bowl?
It was on CBS Sports Network, but it wasn't known because it took a 12-year break. It got played for 50 years, I think, up until the mid-90s. Then it took some time off. Then it came back for a couple of years because they changed locations. They hadn't played the Hula Bowl since 2008. Just another college all-star game. I remember watching it when I was growing up on CBS. But now that it's back, hopefully that becomes a year-in, year-out thing.
If we have somebody go next year, I think somebody from the network should have to go and cover it. And if somebody has to, I'll bite the bullet.
I mean, we got to expand our coverage, right?
Everybody wants more content.
I know that.
And if it takes going to Hawaii, okay.
Okay, Georgia Southern Baseball went to Hawaii in 2006. I know that was Ryan Chambers' first trip when he took over the job.
That's one of the greatest stories, and especially to hear Coach Rodney Hennon tell it. That may need to be in Eagle Tales at some point, because Chambers is deathly afraid of flying, and to have his first trip flying to Hawaii, that was a great story.
We've had our golf teams play in Hawaii. It would make sense. If Georgia Southern football is going to have a Hawaii deal, that we could go, take the flight, we could wear some lays, go to the beach, maybe watch the game if we get a chance. Go to a luau.
Sure. Have a big pig roast.
I think they stuff stones in the pig's mouth.
I don't care what they do to the pig's mouth, as long as the pig goes in my mouth. That's all that matters to me. But you had Georgia Southern taking on Georgia State this past weekend. It was a doubleheader inside Hanner Fieldhouse. Before we dive into the games for men's and women's basketball, one note for women's basketball. Earlier on in the week, on Thursday, you had Jaden Hamilton. Thought she was just going through a normal scout, getting ready for the Georgia State game. And Chris Straker, who it was his scout, said, "Jaden, go ahead and read the defensive part." Well, they had changed her scout to, at the end of it, she read the part where it said, "I got a full-ride scholarship from Georgia Southern University." Now, a lot of people didn't know that Jaden was a walk-on for this team. As much as she's played, she's been in the starting lineup for the last couple of weeks, ever since we were out in Vegas before the change of the new year. But Jaden gets awarded a full-ride scholarship, and this was somebody that had offers to go to Division I schools and play on full scholarship. She turned those down to come to Georgia Southern to try to fight for a scholarship, and she thought she was going to be fighting for a scholarship starting in the fall. Well, Coach Howard and the staff said that she has done a lot for this program, and she has definitely grown ever since she stepped foot here on campus, both on the court and off the court, and just one of the hardest working players that you are going to find, and well-deserving of the scholarship. I think ESPN picked it up. We talked with her last night at Eagle Creek Brewing Company for Inside Georgia Southern Basketball about her mom was there, her grandparents were there, and everybody just kind of dogpiled on her. You see the video on Georgia Southern social media. Again, ESPN picked it up, tweeted it out, put it on Facebook, and it was funny when ESPN had put it up. They were actually in film, so none of them had seen that ESPN picked it up until they came out to practice. I hold my phone up to Jane, and I was like, "Have you seen this?" And her face lit up like a Christmas tree.
The thing about a lot of those walk-ons getting scholarships, most of them are seniors.
Yeah.
Most of them are about to finish up the college experience. I can't imagine not being around the women's basketball team as much because of the mirror schedules, and that Saturday game against State was the first time I'd seen you guys play. I can't imagine how much she's meant to the program to earn the scholarship now, because usually that takes 4 years to build up to that. And I had a chance to watch her play Saturday, and I can see there's a lot still to be done, but what she's already done to earn something like that that's truly remarkable.
It was a heck of a day on Saturday as well for Georgia Southern women's basketball. Got the victory 81-56 over the Georgia State Panthers. First time that Georgia Southern had beaten Georgia State in women's basketball action in the last 7 matchups. Tatum was a big part of the game as Barber with 21 points, 7 rebounds, was 5 of 6 from 3. Georgia Southern outscored Georgia State 30-8 in the third quarter. It was the first time that Georgia Southern had put up 30 points in a quarter since they did it in 2016 against Thomas, the only time they've ever done it since switching to the quarter format back in 2015 against a Division I opponent. But that was a big part of the ball game. Nikki McDonald was clutch early, 15 points finishing up. The other freshman, you had Maya Burns with 12 points, 9 rebounds, just missing her first career double-double. And you had the debut of Janiyah Lovehill, who's been battling back from ACL injury. I think we had figured it out earlier on in the day at Shoot Around. It had been 323 days since she played in a game. Got injured in the state championship game on March the 8th. Her team went on to win the state championship because when she got injured in the third quarter, they were up by 20. And so they didn't necessarily have to have her for the last part of that game. But hadn't played a game since the state championship game and the first came back. It's just going to be your Southern, not state game.
And to play that well in front of such a great crowd. In your 7 years covering women's basketball, you had said that that was one of the better crowds you had seen at Hander Fieldhouse. And to know that on the other side, it's state, you hadn't beaten them in 7 tries. To play that well, to play everybody, and I believe all but one player that got in scored.
Yes. And that's really been the tale for women's basketball. You've heard Coach Howard talk about it. She talked about it last night at Eagle Creek Brewing Company. They're going to use everybody on their roster, whether it's top player or number 15 on the roster. They're going to use everybody. Everybody's going to get their opportunity to prove what they've got. And Georgia Southern women's basketball definitely proved something against Georgia State. Again, an 81-56 victory over the Georgia State Panthers.
You remember what I said last week?
You did.
That game can be a springboard. I thought that the women would win. I knew that State had a few injuries, but having not seen them play, I thought if the women could have an impressive outing, it was going to springboard them throughout the rest of the season. That's maybe as well as I've seen a women's basketball team play since I've been here.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be a challenging road trip. Coastal Carolina, who we're going to talk about in a little bit, is off to a really good start. I know they lost a game at the buzzer last week at Arkansas State. It's always tough to go to Boone, regardless of what kind of team Angel Elderkin has. But I'm telling you, that kind of win could springboard the rest of Anita Howard's first season.
Again, it'll be Thursday in Conway, South Carolina, against the Chanticleers. Maybe I'll get to see our buddy Maddox, the live chicken.
I didn't get to see him when we were there for the new year, but it's possible that... Do chickens hibernate?
I don't know. I've never asked one.
We had a talk about this during baseball season. We thought, did cats hibernate?
What?
Do you remember this?
No.
We were wondering if some kind of animal hibernated, because we all know bears do.
Right.
But I think it might have been Georgia State. I can't remember. But it was, does this animal hibernate? And I thought it was a panther, but maybe it was another kind of cat or somebody else we played. And I don't know what made me think of this, but I'm up there by myself and I'm thinking, okay, if I talk to him about this on the field, what's my reaction going to be? Because I can't see his facial expression. But we're going back and forth.
I was standing in right field.
Well, did this, it could have been Georgia State. I'd have to go back and look at it. But it was, does this animal hibernate? And we got some help. Daryl Lynn Roberts was able to send us the information. We had a tough time trying to find it. And apparently that animal did not hibernate. I do remember that, but I cannot remember for sure what animal it was.
I think I remember now. It amazes me how many just random weird conversations we have, especially just, during baseball.
Clicks. It you need a trigger, and something clicks, and like, oh, that did come up during the 80 hours right. when we're talking about that.
Everybody talks about how in Major League Baseball and the NFL, all the broadcasters have Stats Inc., that they have everything right at their fingertips. I'm convinced that Darrelyn Roberts has become our Stats Inc., because whenever we talk about something, if we are unsure of it, and it's just random stuff, it has nothing to do with the game that we're talking about. I remember one time there was some kind of bird we were trying to figure out what it was, and she sent us the Wikipedia page of the bird pretty much before we had asked for it.
We don't need the Elias Sports Bureau.
Yeah, we got DLR.
We've already got it covered.
Georgia Southern men's basketball finished up the doubleheader with Georgia Southern, Georgia State on Saturday. Fell 82-77. It was a game that you and I had talked about pretty much the entirety of the game until the last probably 6-7 minutes of the game, that Georgia Southern had control of it. It was right around a 5-6 point game for the majority of it, but you never felt like Georgia Southern was out of the ball game and never out of control of the ball game until the last 6 or 7 minutes of it, when Georgia State came back and tied the ball game with right around 5 minutes to go, and then came back after a 14-point lead at one point by Georgia Southern with 12, almost 13 minutes to go in the game. And Ike Smith was a huge part, especially early in the ball game, of mounting the lead for Georgia Southern. Finished up with 23 points, 8 rebounds, and especially there in the first half, you and I talked about it, he had a different look in his eye of facing off against Georgia State.
He had 12 of the first 16 points. I think he and Isaiah Crawley combined accounted for the first 20 points. It was for a while that we didn't need to talk about anybody else on the floor because those two were hot. Crawley hit a couple of threes. The play that got the Eagles to the 14-point lead, though, was the alley-oop from Calvin Wishart to Elijah McCadden. That created the 65-51 score with 12:58 left. It was a 14-point lead. Georgia Southern went 3 of 16 the rest of the way. They had trouble stopping State getting to the rim. They gave up way too many offensive rebounds. State had 18 in the game, and it led to 19 second-chance points. And Mark Byington mentioned this on the Ford Locker Room wrap-up. Georgia Southern's first-shot defense was really good, probably about 33% by his estimation. It was the second and third shots that proved to be their undoing. And the stretch with 5:36 to play, we brought this up numerous times during the final few minutes. You had Isaiah Crawley get fouled. You had a dead ball contact technical after that foul happened. And then Georgia Southern got possession. So there was a chance the Eagles could have netted 7 points out of that. They missed the first 2 free throws. They missed the next 2 free throws on the technical, and then they turned the ball over. At that point, it was, okay, everything that they had built was gone. All the momentum was gone. And even when Ike hit the 3 with 2.5 left to put them back up by 2, they were still leading with a minute left. But then State had the offensive putback. You had the call at half court that didn't get made where McCadden looked like he got hit. It was right in front of us. It looked like there was a foul. It didn't get called. And Georgia Southern went 1 of 7 at the line the last 5.5 minutes. It happened against South Alabama. It happened against App State. Team could be 9-1 in league play, but the 3 games they haven't won, they had double-digit leads in the second half and didn't make their free throws down the stretch. It's been an unfortunate theme.
It's been a little bit of a weird year. We talked about, especially early in the season, how Georgia Southern would get down early in ball games and then be able to battle back from 11, 12, 15 points.
You were there for the Mercer game.
Exactly.
Down 15 early, came back, scored 98 points. Okay, well, whatever. That was fine.
And so you had the options where Georgia Southern was able to come back from those deficits, but it seems like the last couple of weeks it's been hanging on to a lead has what's been the struggle for Georgia Southern, and really and truly it's come down to the free throws. You talked about just the struggles they had the last 5 minutes and the second half, just 59% from the free throw line, and really that's been the struggle. We talked about it in post game. You say that's not the worst thing in the world because it's correctable, but now it's just you've got to put your foot on the gas to do the correctable.
The thing that hurt a little bit more was that Southern was 21 of 26 before that last 5.5 minute stretch. They were 81% for the game. Phenomenal. But for whatever reason, the last little bit just 1 out of 7. And you'd like to think that the team is capable of putting 40 minutes together because if it hasn't been a good first half, it's been a great second half. Lately, it's been really good first halves, but fading in the second half because not having as many guys with Lamar and Jones being out because of academics. Good news is that David Lee Jones Jr. will be back for Saturday against South Alabama. Lamar, we don't know. He's probably going to be done for the rest of the season, which is going to hamper the rotation anyway. But the last two games, David Lee's absence has been really felt. Because in the second half against South Al and against Georgia State, what did? They started pressing. Georgia Southern only has one point guard in Calvin Wishart. And as good as he has been in his sophomore season, I thought he was really good his freshman year. His numbers this year, he has made a great jump, not just with his shooting, but with how he's taken care of the basketball. But he's gotten into foul trouble, especially on Saturday. So Ike Smith is having to step in to run the point. He's not used to that. And the Eagles had trouble moving the ball from back to front against both presses. And you'd like to think when David Lee comes back, the team was going to skyrocket ahead. They're not only going to get a guy back to play, but a guy that maybe could start. Calvin could come back off the bench. I don't know how Coach Byington is going to do that yet. I think you'd be fine either way. What I do know is the team that they play on Thursday in Troy, that's probably the one game this year where Georgia Southern has played a full 40 minutes. They won 82-66, so maybe seeing the Trojans again will get them back on that right track.
We'll continue with a little bit of an oddity of the schedule as Georgia Southern will face the Alabama schools for the second time in 3 weeks here in the next couple of days as the Alabama schools will come to Hander Fieldhouse this weekend. We'll dive into the matchups for both Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball on the final segment of this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But for now, we talked about it a little bit last week, how in our special edition, our breaking news edition of Inside Eagle Nation that came out on Friday, talked about how we had hyped up the True Blue top 20 team. When we got into the boardroom, it wasn't possible to...
It's a fancy boardroom, folks. It's very fancy.
Yeah, it's about as fancy as our studio because it's the same place. But it just wasn't possible to put together a top 20 team of people that had impacted this program with the number of people that have their hand on this program, both currently and have had in the past. We decided to change it up and do a True Blue Eagle of the Week. So again, every Monday, you'll have a video put out, a little minute and a half, 2 minute video of Danny and I talking about whoever the True Blue Eagle of the Week is that week. Week one, obviously. I don't know that anybody's going to dispute that Irk Russell should be number one. He was. Came out yesterday. You can go to Georgia Southern Sports Network on Facebook, at GS Sports Network on Twitter, every Monday to check those out. They'll be coming out on Monday mornings about 9 o'clock. But we will also incorporate them into the podcast. So if you're not able to get into the Facebook, you're not on Twitter, and don't have a way to find the videos, we're going to throw them in to the podcast as well, that you can hear them each and every week. So again, it'll be released on Monday and be repeated on Tuesday for the podcast. So once again, the first True Blue Eagle of the Week, here's our segment on Irk Russell. As promised, the first True Blue Eagle of the Week, there's nobody else that you would pick other than the head man himself, Coach Irk Russell for Georgia Southern Athletics.
The father of Georgia Southern football, he resurrected the program in 1981 when practices were held on tennis courts. Alan E. Paulson Stadium hadn't even been built yet, but just a couple of years later, a national championship victory over Furman, thanks to an amazing third quarter comeback when they were down by 22 points. Then they won it the next year in 86, first 1AA team to ever go back-to-back. And his final season, how do they finish it? 15-0, Leonard Bevel's the mascot, Terry Harbin's the holder, Mike Dowles hits the game-winning field goal against Stephen F. Austin. The first team in the modern era to go 15-0. You still feel the impact, not because of what Irk Russell did for the football program, it's because that every one of our athletic programs lives by his mottos. Do right is so simple, but it is so powerful, and we live by it every single day.
You see what he did on the football field, leading so many teams to so many winning seasons, but being able to kind of start the culture of Georgia Southern of the blue collar, a lot like Coach Lunsford talks about now, blue collar, discipline, and tough. All of that starts with Coach Russell, the do right Everything starts with True Blue. It all starts with Irk Russell. He is this week's True Blue Eagle of the Week. Continue to tune in on Georgia Southern Sports Network on Facebook, GS Sports Network on Twitter, each one coming out on Monday morning. Once again, that is our first ever edition of our True Blue Eagle of the Week. Those will come out on Monday mornings. They'll be repeated on the podcast on Tuesdays. Excited to get that segment rolling to kind of feature both people that have had their hand on the program, that currently have their hand on the program, and in a way, in the future, will have their hand on the program.
You could probably guess just about everybody that we're going to be featuring over the course of however long we decide to do this, but maybe you'll find out about some people that you possibly forgot along the way. And there's a lot of people that played here, coached here, worked here, and are still passionate about this place. But this isn't just people that we can still reach out and talk to. These are all-time people. So, yes, the first one being Irk Russell. We know he passed away back in 2006. But a lot of people of that ilk as well, and something to make us remember why we feel about this place, the way we do about this place. And maybe for someone that's just finding out about Georgia Southern, by listening and hearing about some of those people, maybe it'll motivate you to become a True Blue Eagle as well.
And one thing about this feature, and I think that we've done a relatively good job of being pretty open about why we're doing what we're doing. One of the big reasons for doing the True Blue Eagle of the Week is not only to feature people that don't get a whole lot of love and different people. Obviously, you're going to have guys like Alan E. Paulson, J.I. Clements, people like that that everybody knows about. But part of the True Blue Eagle of the Week, too, is going to be people that have a hand on this program that a lot of people, A, don't know have a hand on this program or as big of a hand on this program as they do. And then the casual fan may not know who they are. It's people that you may see every Saturday if you come to Paulson Stadium, every Thursday and Saturday if you come to Hanner, and all weekend if you come to baseball. But I think of people like Julian and Francis Deal that we see every week at the coaches show, see at almost every home Georgia Southern event. You have people like Miss Helen Yates. It's been over 30 years since she missed a home basketball game.
That's
for Georgia Southern.
To me.
It's amazing. And people that the casual fan may bump into them in a line trying to get into Hanner, may pass them and sit next to them at Alan E. Paulson if not knowing who they are. But people that have a hand on this program that need to be recognized and really and truly probably don't want the recognition or don't ask for the recognition, they're fine with just being the part of the program that they are, the big part of the program that they are, and not really being in the limelight. Well, we're coming in and trying to push that a little bit.
They may not have been trying to get it, but for what they've done, they absolutely deserve it, and that's why we're going to be doing this.
Georgia Southern women's basketball will hit the road this week to the Carolinas on Thursday. It'll be the Coastal Carolina Chanticleer, 6 o'clock tip-off from the HTC Center, as I'll get to see my old buddy Enoch, one of the nicest human beings on the face of this planet, I am convinced. But get to match up with the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers on Thursday. They come in 15-3, 5-2 in conference play. As you mentioned earlier, had a heartbreaking loss at the hands of Arkansas State. Arkansas State's Jaira Washington hit a buzzer beater to defeat Coastal Carolina. This was a Coastal team that came in really thinking that they were going to run the Sun Belt this year. Had a heck of a non-conference slate. But again, 15-3, their overall mark, 5-2 in the conference. They're led by Asia Blount, 14 points per game. Has already had two 30-plus point games on the season for Coastal. You've got DJ Williams, who has been a mainstay atop the Sun Belt Conference, scoring 16.5 points per game so far. And this is a team that has really improved on the offensive side. They're the second highest scoring team in the Sun Belt, behind Troy, of course. But the defense has always been there. You've got the tops in the conference, only allowing about 57 points a game. And so when you've got a team that can score it and also keep you from scoring it, I think that's kind of the recipe for basketball, isn't it?
We've spent a lot of time about how open the men's side is this year, and I would argue with Little Rock probably being a little bit down. I know they've won 10 of the last 11 women's championships. Maybe the women's side is just as wide open. I know Troy can score a lot, but they also give up a lot. Coastal probably has its best team since moving to the Sun Belt, so maybe they feel like it is their year. And as much as they have improved, a couple of times a year, you are going to get your heart broken. And I saw the clip on ESPN of the two shots at the end of the game, the putback that barely got in before the buzzer to give Coastal its third loss. But even after Georgia Southern just had as an impressive win as the Eagles did against Georgia State, this is probably the time to get tested. Started conference play 2-0, sweeping the Louisianas, going to Arkansas thinking, okay, maybe we're as good as we think we are. Got close, but not quite. Use that last game as the, okay, we knew what it felt like before. Now we know what we need to do in order to pick up some road victories. You need to defend home court in this league, and you need to find a way to win at least half of your games on the road.
And I think you nailed it on the head with how much parity there is in this league. You look at it, Georgia Southern at 3-4 in conference, 6-12 overall. They sit right now in 8th place in the conference standings. But if you go out and have a good week against the Carolina schools and things fall where they might, you've got a chance to be up as high as 5th just from one weekend in conference play. You've got Troy at the top at 7-1, Little Rock at 6-2, Louisiana at 6-2. Oh, by the way, you play all of those teams coming up in the next couple of weeks.
And from what I understand, the tournament format this year is a little bit different than what they're doing on the men's side.
It is. And I didn't realize how different it was until you and I and Josh Cooperwood, the assistant coach for Georgia Southern women's basketball, were talking at a men's practice earlier on last week of, for the women's, the top two teams will get an automatic bye into the semifinals that will take place down in New Orleans in the Smoothie King Center. For the rest of the teams, the bottom two don't make any kind of postseason.
So just like the men, 11-12, out.
Right. Just like the last couple of years where the bottom two don't go to any kind of postseason. 3-10 will kind of end up in two different pools. You'll have the 3-seed host, you'll have the 4-seed host. And so you will have the 3-seed host, and there will be 4 teams in that side of the bracket. You'll have the 4-seed host, and there will be 3 other teams in that side of the bracket. So you've got the 3-seed, the host site, playing the 10-seed, the 6-seed playing the 7-seed on one day. The next day, the winner of those two teams will play in a quote-unquote on-site championship game. You'll have the 4-seed hosting the 9-seed, the 5-seed, and the 8-seed playing at the number 4-seed host site. That way, you've got those two winners will come together. The winner of those two quote-unquote little small brackets, the winner of the 3-seed host site will go on to play the 1-seed in the semifinals down in New Orleans. The 2-seed will face the winner of the 4-seed host site down in New Orleans. And then you'll get into the regular. Whoever wins that will go to the championship game, and whoever wins that will be the winners of the Sun Belt Conference.
That's definitely different.
I've never seen something where you have the groupings like that, but it makes a lot of sense, especially for the way this league is so spread out. Because on the men's side, you could be playing a game in Texas, have a travel day in between, and having to go to Boone.
Yeah. The way the women have it set up, it's almost like a little NCAA regional.
Right.
Because those have 4 teams, and then whoever wins that, those two play each other, and then whoever wins that moves on to the, you know, the regional final and what have you. But for the men, we've mentioned this before, but it bears repeating, and probably can go over it again. 11-12 don't play. They're out. 7-10, 8-9 play each other on campus. Those two winners move on to play the 5-6 seeds on campus. The winners of those games, with a day in between, travel to face the 3-4 teams on campus. The winners from those go to New Orleans, Smoothie King, to take on 1-2. The winner of that on Sunday after the Saturday doubleheader would play Sunday.
Wow.
So say if you're a bottom 4 seed, there is a chance that you would have to win 3 different road games at 3 different sites before you even get to New Orleans, having to win 2 more games to clinch a spot in the NCAA tournament. So for instance, if you're the 10, let's say you upset the 7, and then you have to go to the 5-seed. You upset the 5-seed. And say you have to go play the 4-seed on the 4-seed's home floor. You upset them. 3 wins, 3 sites in 5 days. Ugh. And then you get 2 days worth of being able to travel down to New Orleans in the semifinal matchup, needing to win 2 more in 2 days to win a championship. So that's where a top 6 is absolutely essential. A top 2 is enormous because you play 2 games at the most. But even 3-4, you've got to play an additional game, but you automatically get only one, and that game is at home.
I don't envy the job of the director of basketball operations for the 9 and 10 seeds. That might be the only time where you have somebody on staff hoping you don't win.
ULM had it last year where I think they were playing their fifth game in four sites in 9 days. Holy and they were cow. Just gassed.
Yeah,
that was when Georgia Southern, they rocked bottom by 30 in the second half, ended up winning and getting to the semifinals. But they don't typically play a whole lot of guys. It's a little bit different this year because they have a different team makeup. We know that Keith Richard usually likes those 6- and 7-man rotations. But I can just remember the night before, they had throttled Coastal, beat them by 30 points. And knowing that you got to play them the next day, man, they shoot like that. They play like that. Southern's going home. But after an early rush, I think they made some threes. They just didn't have enough thought. So that's what those bottom seeds are going to have to deal with if they decide that they're going to make one of those runs.
Women's basketball, again, after the game on Thursday against Coastal, will head up the mountain to take on Appalachian State on Saturday, 2 o'clock, the tip-off. App State has struggled mightily so far throughout the first part of Sun Belt Conference play, just 4-14 overall, 1-6 in conference play. Their only win come against the winless Texas State Bobcats, only averaging about 57 points a game, a good majority of that coming from Pri Stanley, 14 points a game, shooting 38% from behind the arc. But Bailey Plummer is somebody that we have heard her name for a couple of years now from atop the mountain. Averaged 12 rebounds a game last year, 6th nationally, had the most rebounds per game in the Sun Belt Conference since 1993. This year, she's doing more of the same. She was injured in 7 games, so didn't play in every game that Appalachian State has played. But she's averaging 12 rebounds per game again. She would be in the top 3 nationally, but because she missed a couple of games, don't qualify as far as NCAA is concerned. In the next couple of games, she should be back in the top rankings in the NCAA. But Bailey Plummer, 12 rebounds a game. And you see every once in a while at the beginning of conference play somebody averaging 10, 11 rebounds a game. But this deep into conference play, you don't really see 12 rebounds per game show up on the stat sheet.
Is it safe to say that App State typically has at least one of the best players in the league?
Yeah.
Whether it's Bree Carter for years, whether it was Maddie Story. I know she did miss a year because of a torn ACL, but was it a year or two ago she led them to the WBI championship on a buzzer beater?
Yes.
Is that right?
It was.
Okay.
But again, Saturday, 2 o'clock atop the mountain for Georgia Southern women's basketball. 6 o'clock on Thursday against the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers from the Grand Strand.
Bring your shovel. Going to have to do some snow shoveling.
Yeah, we're going to go from the beach to the mountain.
That's what's cool about the Carolina trip, but that's what stinks about the Carolina trip at the same time. See, I would want to start at Boone and finish in Conway.
Yeah, I'd want to be cold and warm up a little bit rather than be, oh, this is nice. Oh, now it's cold.
But in the 4 years that Georgia Southern men have made this trip, all 4 times, it's been Coastal first and then App.
It's been the same way for women.
I don't know why it's that way, but that's just how it is.
Men's basketball will get to enjoy the friendly confines of Hanner Fieldhouse Thursday against the Trojans of Troy, 7 o'clock the tip-off. Saturday against South Alabama, 4 o'clock the tip-off. We start against Troy. Again, this is a stretch where 2 of the last 3 weeks, Georgia Southern has played the Alabama schools for whatever reason.
It happened last year, too. Got them in late January, had the break with a game against State, played them again in middle of February. That was right around the start of baseball season.
Makes it nice for you. You don't have to dig too deep in your archives to find the boards for them.
Oh, well, I keep all the boards that you make each week.
May as well just leave those on the couch.
Well, I don't put them in the special filing cabinet cardboard box. I leave them on the floor. And then, okay, we're just playing them. We'll just go and copy everything right back over.
But Troy got the victory 82-66 a couple of weeks ago inside Trojan Arena. Isaiah Crawley, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, how he had a great performance in both of these games.
Yeah.
But Troy is a team that is trying to get it. We've talked about it a couple of weeks ago, how whenever it clicks for Scott Cross in his first year, it's going to really click. It just hasn't clicked quite yet, and you hope it's after Thursday.
Well, before I mentioned some of the wins they had, they won at Texas State. They beat an undefeated Little Rock team when they were 5-0. They beat Coastal to start conference play. I know Coastal's tapered off a little bit. They just lost all 3 of their home games. They just beat Georgia State. They outscored them 25-10 over the final 8 minutes of a game that State probably should have won. They collapsed, kind of like Georgia Southern did last Saturday at Hander. So Troy has the ability, but the last two games, the Trojans have gotten blown out. One at Little Rock, they got the revenge. Then they came back home thinking that, all right, Trojan Arena against Arkansas State. Arkansas State had just defeated them in overtime 2 weeks earlier. Ark State controlled the game. So now Troy is in 10th place, which halfway through you can say what you want to. Louisiana Monroe is really struggling. They just lost to Louisiana Lafayette. You kind of are where you are at this point. But now Troy's got to go back on the road. I don't think they've had a full homestand in a month because them and Arkansas have had the split weeks that we've talked about already on this podcast. They haven't won in Statesboro since 2015. They've lost all four games since I've been here. 2 years ago, it was Jake Allsmiller making 8 threes on senior day, still one of my favorite memories from a game at Hander Fieldhouse. Last year was the famous broken rim game where we had to wait 25 minutes on opening night of baseball while you're over at Auburn. I'm trying to figure out if we're going to get a game in. It was a 9 o'clock tip on ESPN2. We finally got the rim fixed, ended up beating Troy 76-51. Then drove 4 hours over to Auburn and played 13 innings the next day.
That was a weird week.
Really weird week.
Because I was in Alabama for basketball anyway. I went over Friday, called the baseball game.
That's right.
And then I got back to Plainsman Park, and we're coming up the steps as Noah Ledford hit the bomb in the 13th inning.
The bomb in the 13th inning.
That's Ken Ledford's boy.
That is Ken Ledford's boy. Beat Troy already 82-66, though. I mentioned it was probably the most complete game, the most close to a 40-minute game as you're going to find. Crawley was 24-10 that game. Quan Jackson had 19. Eagles were 53% from the field. And then you get a rematch against South Alabama. I know the guys want this one.
Fell 74-68 2 weeks ago to the South Alabama Jaguars down in the Mitchell Center. That's a 4 p.m. tip inside Hanner on Saturday. In game one, you had Josh Ajayi with 24 points. Herb McGee, who it seems like he is the Hunter Renfro of South Alabama, he had 15 points, 10 of those coming from the free throw line. And it just seems like South Alabama is not the matchup that Georgia Southern wants. But like you said, you kind of feel around this team that South Alabama is one that has been circled. I hadn't been circled for very long because you just saw them. But
correct. Preseason favorite. They just stubbed their toe last week. They lost a close game at Arkansas State. Then they lost at home by two to Little Rock, who's in first place in the league by a game and a half going into this weekend's action. I go back to something we talked about a little bit earlier. Georgia Southern played a really, really good first half of the Mitchell Center. They were up 39-31. They were forcing South Alabama to take bad shots. Eagles had 9 first-half threes, but that was the second game in 3 days where they were having to play with basically 6 guys. Yeah, you saw 8 on the box score, but really only 6 were getting considerable minutes. Found some foul trouble, maybe a little bit of fatigue. South Alabama ramped up its press. Georgia Southern had trouble handling it, and this is something that I didn't get a chance to bring up during that game. Jaguars turned the ball over one time in the second half of that game. They didn't shoot it great. They only made 3 threes, but they rallied at the end of the game. Georgia Southern had trouble at the line, and it kept the Eagles from keeping pace with Little Rock. Granted, at the same time, Georgia State had lost to Troy, so they were tied for second going into last Saturday. But with a loss to State, Georgia Southern, now at 6-4 in the league, is in fourth. So at the moment, you're still top 4 seed, so you'd have to host a quarterfinal game in order to get to the semifinals down in New Orleans. But we've got 10 left. It's a stretch of games where Georgia Southern is going to be favored in 6 straight games. These 2 at home. You go to Louisiana the next week against 2 struggling Louisiana schools, but they're starting to maybe figure it out in their own way, especially the Cajuns. They're getting some guys back from injury. And then you're back home for the Carolinas. Coastal's been struggling. App State is really hot and cold. Cold, always in Boone. But they have had a consistently good defense, but they've struggled scoring. But if Georgia Southern can find its way getting David Lee Jones Jr. back on Saturday, this is the time where they got to make their push, because Little Rock is showing that they're really good. State is proving that they are better than their preseason number 6 ranking in this conference, and they're going to have to keep pace. It's not so much that they just need to win. They need to catch up while at the same time holding off a fast-charging Arlington team, which has played really well since starting slow. You could put Texas State in that category, and who knows what you're going to get from South Alabama. Capable of beating anybody, but now they're sub-500 in league play.
Again, this weekend, women's basketball on the road at Coastal Carolina. 6 o'clock the tip-off on Thursday. 2 o'clock atop the mountain against Appalachian State on Saturday. For men's basketball, two games inside Hanner Thursday against Troy at 7 p.m. 4 p.m. the tip-off on Saturday against the South Alabama Jaguars. Well, it was nice seeing you for a full week, but time to hit the road again.
So baseball starts in... See, you would think, you think with baseball, we're going to get a chance to see each other more. It's going to create some havoc with the schedules, but at least we'll be in the same zip code for a couple days a week instead of this whole, okay, we'll see you on Monday for the podcast, right, and then you go wherever I stay, or I go wherever and you stay.
Yeah. I feel like that song, I've Been Everywhere, Man. I think we tried to rewrite that song with been to Monroe, Louisiana, all that stuff too. It didn't really work out so well.
That could be a fun project. We'd have to do them in a way where it would sound the same way that Johnny Cash did it. Huh. We would need some time.
That sounds like a road trip to Troy or something. That
if we just had that.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
Look, mind. If I would have known that coming back from Mobile, I would have worked on that for 8 hours. I wouldn't have done anything else. I would have sat there and put the cities in the order they needed to be.
Well, I've got 6 coming down the mountain on Sunday, so we'll figure that out before we get to Super Bowl Sunday.
God love you.
But this week, it's Coastal Carolina and Appalachian State for women's basketball at home against Troy and South Al for men's. Until next week, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.